Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in, What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 218. We haven't been on in a week and a half. I've traveled halfway around the world. We've had a ton to do. I got to see Diora, former What's Right co-host, perform in a great play, Clyde's at UC Santa Cruz, wearing their gear. Went to Japan, saw some awesome castles. You listen to my wife tell the story. I was so excited about seeing one of these castles that I almost teared up about it. Maybe we'll get into that later in the show. And while I was gone, LeBron James scored his 40,000th point. And I know it makes me lame to care about it, even though Michael Jordan once upon a time got an on-court trophy for scoring his 30,000th point, even though he was the fourth guy to do it. But more on that in a moment. First, here's what missed the cut. Adam Schefter further confirming a story we already knew, which is that San Francisco didn't even scout Patrick Mahomes, even though they didn't have a quarterback and they did have the number three pick of that draft. Number two pick of the draft. Carlos Alcaraz beat Rafael Nadal in Vegas, and a Jacksonville Huge. Jaguars wish a defensive tackle happy birthday, and then they cut him later that day. Demonze, how are you?
I'm doing good. Can't complain.
You're dressed for your office job instead of the pod today. Yeah, I don't know if we're used to seeing you in the Stafford button down if people are watching on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I can wear this shirt into the office. The button on the sleeve is broken. I realized that after getting here this morning.
You just roll it up. Just roll it up to the elbow. And you'll be totally fine.
No, by the way,
speaking
guys.
Of Thank Sorry, you. Excited to see you. Speaking of YouTube, I was scrolling through the iTunes podcast numbers, and we have plummeted down the ranks because, again, they like reward new subscriptions. I'm not sure. But I have not asked you guys to like, rate, subscribe, or review in years. We just play at the end of every episode this video I recorded from my house, I think with a ponytail, 2 years ago. So I'm going to go ahead and ask today for you to like, rate, subscribe, review on iTunes, Spotify, and on YouTube.
Please.
Try to juice those numbers as we get going for our NBA playoff push. Demonze, go ahead and get us started if you would.
Yes, like you said, LeBron just continues to make history. He just scored his 40,000 points. His 40,000 point, I should say. Is one of the biggest reasons that you've been the huge LeBron supporter you've been is because of his consistency. Like, it still seems like he's got a lot more in the tank, to be honest.
Well, listen, we know he's the best old player ever, and we know he was the best teenager ever, and these things are not even in dispute. But yesterday on TV, we said that, you know, we didn't want to have a big GOAT debate about this, and then it turned into a big GOAT debate, and I got very frustrated with it. Because, as you guys know, and we did a whole anthology series on it, I think there are three guys who have credible arguments for the greatest player of all time. Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, LeBron James. I think if anybody, and we should flip the rundown on the left-hand side. We're going to do the LeBron stuff first and then the Russ if you're watching on YouTube. But I think anybody that is going to argue adamantly that any of those three should be dismissed out of hand is being intellectually dishonest. I'm not a Jordan guy. I understand the argument. I personally think that Kareem gets the total short end of the stick. I don't think he's the greatest ever, but he has a hell of a case. And if you expand it past what they did in the NBA, he probably has the best case. But even just for NBA, of the three contenders, nobody has more rings. Nobody has more MVPs. Nobody has more. Does Kareem have 9 or 10 finals appearances? LeBron might have more finals appearances. But there, and up until a year ago, nobody had more points. So I think there's a credible argument for him. And obviously, I think there is a lengthy, credible argument for LeBron. What is so frustrating to me is so many of the folks who believe it's Jordan, which is an obviously legitimate position to hold, argue their case in such an illegitimate manner. They argue their case, and in my opinion, such an intellectually dishonest manner, where things that counted for Jordan, if you count them for LeBron, they scoff at it. And I'll use the 40,000, 30,000 points thing as an example. Michael Jordan got it was flying around Twitter yesterday, a trophy this big, about the size of the Larry O'Brien trophy, for getting to 30,000 points. When he got there, Karl Malone was already there, Wilt was already there, Kareem was already there. A stop the game, take the trophy moment for 30,000. LeBron gets to 40. And people are like, oh, are you're not seriously going to make this part of the GOAT debate, are you? Well, it's part of it. But so Brew on the show yesterday said, listen, we don't do GOATs by longevity. We do GOATs by peak. And I actually disagree. I think it is a tapestry. I think it is all of the above to a degree. I think that a lot of people would argue Randy Moss had a higher peak than Jerry Rice. But it was close, their two peaks. And Rice's longevity is so demonstrably better, he's universally regarded as the GOAT wide receiver. So I think it's all of the above is how we do it. But when we say, okay, let's talk peaks, and this is where the Jordan folks, in my opinion, are dishonest. What is peak? Are we talking one season? Because there is no single season Michael Jordan ever had better than LeBron James's 2013 season. It doesn't exist. In 2013 for LeBron James, he was the league MVP. He was the finals MVP. He had a damn near perfect game 6 of the finals, down 3-2, and then a perfect game 7 of the finals, 37-12, and the game-winning jump shot over Kawhi Leonard. And, oh yeah, by the way, during that year, they had a 27-game winning streak, and he was 3 votes away from winning Defensive Player of the Year. Find the Jordan season that matches that. You can't. People are like, oh, but Michael Jordan won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same year. He did. In a year, he did not even make it to the finals, let alone win the championship. So when are we talking Jordan's peak? Are we talking 1 year? Then LeBron's peak was higher. Are we talking 2 years? Well, then it's going to be an argument. Because LeBron James in 12 and 13, when 1 year he damn near shot 60% from the field, won back-to-back league MVPs, back-to-back finals MVPs, beat 2 all-time teams in those NBA finals with 7 Hall of Famers on those teams between them. I don't know. Seems pretty good. Now, does that match up to Jordan's 2-year peak? They're at least equivalent. Jordan 92-93 with a couple league. Well, actually, that was only one league MVP. Now I think of it, because Barkley won it in 93. Jordan probably should have. Two finals MVPs. They're at least close. Three-year peak, that goes to Jordan. LeBron never won three MVPs in a row. Jordan didn't either. But LeBron never won three titles in a row. Jordan did. Four-year peak? Now it tilts back to LeBron James. Well, wait, what do you mean, Nick? Well, 4 years. What 4 years are we talking about? Nick, you mean you're holding against Michael Jordan when he didn't play? Yes. I'm not holding against it. And this is where I say people are dishonest. People will then say that you are being dishonest if you count years in the order in which they happened on the calendar. They're like, oh, that is f-ing crazy. You're going to count 1994? It's like, well, it wasn't mythical. It existed. Well, that's ludicrous to do that. Four-year peak, though, maybe you could argue Jordan. Five-year peak, you can't. Find me Jordan's best 5 years, and you're going to likely go 89-93. You could go 94-98, but then you have to include the year Shaq and Penny beat him in round two, which, again, I know you're not allowed to talk about that year. That year didn't happen, but it really did. The games were on TV and everything. You could bet on them. You could watch them. I know there is a whole generation of people that have been tricked into believing. It's this weird thing where it's like you can't mention those 2 years that Jordan didn't win the title in the middle of the six rings. But they can say he would have won eight in a row if he didn't quit. But one of those years, they're saying he would have won the title. He did play and lost to a team that didn't even go win the title. They got swept. But you find me a better five-year peak than LeBron James from 12 to 16. 2012. NBA champion, league MVP, finals MVP. 2013, 27-game winning streak, NBA or league MVP, finals MVP. 2014, shot 58% from the field in the finals, 49%, 50% from three, and the guy guarding him won finals MVP. The next year, 36-13-9 in the NBA finals with Matthew Dellavedova as his second best player on his team, and the guy guarding him won finals MVP, and the next year, 3-1 comeback on a 73-win team. You find me a better five-year run. Find it. I'm excited to see it, but it doesn't exist. So what are we talking peak? So the point I am making there is the peak argument LeBron-Michael is at least one that can be debated. Define peak. If it's 1 year, it's LeBron. If it's 2 years, it's probably a tie. If it's 3 year, it's Jordan. If it's 4 year and you go by actual years on the calendar, it's clearly LeBron. If you go by years Michael Jordan would count, then it's Jordan. We go back and forth with it. If it's 10 years, it's clearly LeBron, but that's probably not peak. Except for LeBron's peak really was 10 years because he won his first title in 2012 and his last title in 2020. So that's a decade stretch, but set that aside. So peak is an argument. Longevity is not. Extended excellence is not. The gap between LeBron James and Michael Jordan career points is greater than the gap between Michael Jordan and Reggie Miller career points. LeBron is going to finish probably, he's right now fourth. He's probably going to finish second, at least third in assists. Something Jordan's not in the top 30 on. Like the longevity piece of it, LeBron's going to finish with double the All-NBAs. So if one piece of the argument is an argument and the other is not, but then what you decide is those things don't count. And this is where the argument becomes frustrating for me. If someone were to say the 2011 finals is disqualifying for LeBron, I disagree with it, but I'll listen to it. But if I say the fact that Michael Jordan played 5 years of his career without Scottie Pippen, and all 5 years was below 500, should that be disqualifying? People just react like you spit at them. Like, oh, you're going to bring up the Wizards years? Oh, I don't f-ing know, guys. Was he playing? Was he younger when he started with the Wizards than LeBron is right now? So, I don't know. At one point, people would say, oh, you're going to bring up his first few years in the NBA? Well, I don't know. Because Michael, as a rookie, was the same age LeBron was when he was in the NBA Finals carrying Boobie Gibson and the 07 Cavs to those finals at 22 years old. Oh, you're going to use 22-year-old Jordan, the fact that he wasn't above 500 against him? You use the fact that 22-year-old LeBron lost in the NBA Finals against him. He's not 4-6 without dragging that team there. I just want an honest discussion. And if the answer is it's about rings, the whole point of the sport is about championships, Michael has 6, LeBron has 4, shut up, I don't want to hear it. Okay, that's fine. Then let's talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Can we? Let's talk about him. Because how many rings does he have? 6. How did he look right at the beginning of his career before he got Magic Johnson? I don't know. Year 2. He was the league MVP. He was the scoring champ. He was the finals MVP. He was the best player on maybe the best team ever. Pretty good. This is pretty good. What was his longevity? Well, he played 21 seasons. How good was he at the end? Well, I don't know. In 1988 NBA Finals, the game-winning play of the most important game was drawn up for him. And he drew the foul and hit the 2 free throws. So it's pretty good at that age. 3 years older than or 2 years older than Michael was when he was limping around for the Wizards. So if we want to just, how many points? Michael was the greatest scorer ever. Does he have as many points as Kareem? No, he's about 5,000 short. Oh, that's odd. Well, Michael's apex was the highest. Does he have the most MVPs? No, actually, Kareem has 6. And Kareem won his 6 in his first 10 years. What was that peak? I don't know, pretty high. Just kept winning them. How long was Kareem's peak? He won a finals MVP in year 2 and a finals MVP in year 15. How did Kareem deal with the pressures of being in the league? Well, I don't know. He was a black Muslim revolutionary in the 1970s, changed his name, got death threats, and soldiered on for 20 years. Didn't take any breaks from the sport, kept playing. So you want to have a real argument, let's have the real argument. If you want to change the argument to Michael Jordan is the greatest ever, and the way every other basketball player ever will be judged will be how close are they to Jordan, then that's fine. But just be honest that that's what you're doing. Because that is part of the Kobe, as great as he was, part of the Kobe legend is not that Kobe was even better than Tim Duncan, which he wasn't. Kobe's an all-timer, very close. Duncan was better. It was Kobe is the closest we've ever seen to Jordan. And for some people, that means Kobe is the next best player. But the goal is to not be Michael Jordan. The goal is to be the best player possible. And the 39-year-old who's on 20 straight years of 25 points per game, who's on 21 straight All-Star teams, who's on 20 consecutive all NBAs, that guy who we saw in last season against the team that the eventual champs play all 48 minutes in game four of the conference finals, that guy, to dismiss it and say, oh, he's a compiler, you're not compiling if you're still great. If LeBron was just like, I'm in year 27, averaging 11 a night, add him up, it's not what's happening. He's the best player on a team that made the conference finals a year ago. So does 40,000 points matter? I don't know. It used to when nobody thought it was going to happen. Kareem's record mattered so much more when people thought Michael or Kobe might get it. And then when they didn't, it's like, what is it, you know, what does it really mean? At once upon a time, it meant something. And as far as this idea of will anyone ever catch it, all it would take to get to forget catch LeBron, because he's still adding to it. If someone, DeMonte, walked into the league today and from the first game of their career averaged 35 points per game, all they would have to do to get to 40,000 points is play 70 games a year, every year, never get hurt, average 35 a night, and play for 16 seasons, and they'll get there. So good luck. So how did LeBron get to 40,000? Be the youngest great player ever, be the oldest great player ever, never get hurt, be the most consistent offensive force over 20 years the league's ever seen. And while you're doing it, go ahead and become, you know, third or fourth all time in assists. But I don't know, man. He wasn't 6 for 6, which, by the way, neither was Michael. But of course he was, if you just don't count those other 9 years. Matt Ford, our great producer, was worried before the show because I was a little withdrawn, quiet. And I don't think he knew if I was going to have the thought of maybe I was a little jet-lagged coming out of Japan. Didn't know if I was going to have the juice. I was just trying to psych myself up for what I knew was going to be like a 20-minute rant and trying to nail it. And I'm happy with it. I'm happy with it. I don't know how we're... So this is one of the weaknesses of this show's growth on social media, is my best stuff goes too long. I'm not great in 90 seconds. I need a good 14 to 18 minutes to really get... I'm like more of a stew than like a ramen noodle. I need a real slow roast to get going, but once it does, it can cook. Go ahead, pal. Sorry.
So basically, Kareem's the GOAT.
You know what? If you want to, I'm okay with the argument. I'm okay with the argument. And Kareem, by the way, if the question is best basketball life, Kareem, who won the state title every year, lost once in high school, went to UCLA his freshman year, UCLA, back then, freshmen couldn't play. The varsity team won the national championship, but his freshman team beat them in practice. And then he took over, you know, his sophomore year, 3 years, 3 national championships, 2 total losses, 3 tournament MVPs, Jesus. 3 player of the years, and then walks into the NBA in year 2, scores 35 a night, wins league MVP and finals MVP. And then year 20, is still getting buckets in the NBA Finals. You want to argue that guy's the GOAT? I'm fine with it. But I don't know, man. He has a few finals losses, so those might be disqualifying. Give me a break. All right, what's next?
2 total losses in college. That's insane.
The guy in high school and college won the state or national championship 7 times and lost 3 games. It was bananas. Go ahead.
All right, so moving on to a lighter subject, or I guess however you want to look at it. The Broncos and Russell Wilson seem to be Splitsville this coming Monday.
Yeah.
The Russell Wilson trade might go down as one of the worst trades ever. But do you think there's any team out there that can, obviously the trade is going to leave the Broncos with a bunch of dead cap space? I think it's $83 yeah. million over the course of like four more years or three more?
Well, no. They got the dead cap, they got to eat over two. The contract would have gone another five, but the dead cap, it's 85 million over the next 2 years. So they got to eat that over the next two. I think it's 39 and 46, but go ahead.
Okay. Do you think there's a team out there that can resurrect Russell Wilson's career? You see him going.
No, not resurrect it. So there's a lot here. So just some kind of nerdy cap machinations of this here. So DeMonze, Russell's contract has these things called offsets. So this is actually going to be it's useful information that is probably it's going to be new to you, but it's also new to a lot of the audience. This more so happens in coaching contracts. It sometimes happens in player contracts, but it allows Russ to do something intriguing here, which is this next season. The Broncos owe Russell Wilson $39 million in cash, okay?
Yeah.
They owe him, they technically, though, owe him $39 million minus whatever he gets paid by a team this year. So if he retires, they owe him the full $39 million. If he signs with a team for $10 million, they owe him $29 million. So the point is this. Russell Wilson can't make more than $39 million and he's this next season, and he's guaranteed to make exactly $39 million. So it is in his best interest, if he wants to stick it to the Broncos and help his next team the most, to take the league minimum. Which makes him an intrigue. He gets the same amount of money no matter what. There's no double dipping. So he should play. You follow what I'm saying? He should play for the league. Wherever he wants to play, it should be for the league minimum for a year, which is going to give him a chance to land somewhat on his feet. So the Giants are a possibility, because I don't know if you saw, but they said Daniel Jones. Or I shouldn't say they said, it was reported that they evidently, you know, all of he's a sudden were able to watch Daniel Jones play. It was crazy they couldn't do it before they gave him the 4 for $160. It's unbelievable that, you know what I mean? They couldn't quite get around to watching Daniel Jones play. But now that they have, they're like, oh, God damn, who gave him that contract? And then the guy's like, you did, sir. He's like, well, so we got to find out whose fault this is. I mean, so he's a possibility. The Vikings, maybe. Because it sounds like Kirk might end up in Atlanta. And there's so much dumb stuff going on. The Atlanta Falcons, a year ago. Hey, did you guys think about offering Lamar a contract? Hell no. Why would we do that? You crazy? That type of money for that risky of a player? Not doing it. The Atlanta Falcons right now. 36-year-old Kirk Cousins coming off popped Achilles. Man, we can't wait to break the bank for him. Some of these teams are just so bad at business. It's just so ridiculous. But set that aside. So the Steelers, I would think, would be the right fit for us. But the Steelers, again, and I like Tomlin, all the reporting out of Pittsburgh is the Steelers saw Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph play last year, and they're like, nope, we are good to go, boys. So I don't know what's going to happen, but a lot of these teams are just dumb. There is one intriguing team that nobody seems to be mentioning, but I would, if I were running the New England Patriots, and I have the third pick of the draft, and I have now heard the Giants are desperate to move on from Daniel Jones, and they have the sixth pick of the draft. Would I, because at the third pick, you're going to get the third available quarterback. If I were New England, would I consider seeing, hey, Giants, to move from 6 to 3, will you give us next year's number one? And then we can, you know, move back, draft either Malik Nabers or Joe Alt, the left tackle or the wide receiver, add another draft pick, and then sign Russ for the league minimum? I would consider that. So there are a few possibilities where Russ could end up, but he is not guaranteed to be a starter next year. And this has cost him any shot he had at the Hall of Fame. This has been a mortifying turn of events for him. And for the Denver Broncos, it was as disastrous, DeMonze, a trade and contract situation as we've ever seen. What are you laughing about? Hold on. I have to know. You seem like you're freaking out about something. You just grabbed your head. What's going on?
I got caught in a bad spot. It's not a good angle at all.
You're worried about your LeBron. Oh, you didn't like how your hairline looks? I saw you cover your head. This is another reason to subscribe on YouTube. DeMonze thinks the camera angle is he also is kind of mad at his last haircut. He thinks the barber messed up his hairline, so he's self-conscious about it. And then he thought there was a weird angle. The camera came on, so DeMonze grabbed his head. I was like, what's going on here? I thought it was a reaction to my Russell Wilson take. But for the Denver Broncos to give up three first-round picks, a second-round pick, three players in a trade for Russell Wilson. And this is the part that really hurts. The trade is awful, but as the Niners showed you, giving up three first-round picks for Trey Lance, you can overcome the trade piece of it. You can't do what the Broncos and the Browns did. The trade cap space plus the contract. That's the one you can't overcome. And the Broncos, what's so baffling is Russ had 2 years left on his deal. When you have a quarterback you love, if they have 1 year left, you basically have to extend them. But Russ had 2 years left and hadn't played for him. They're like, nope, no problem. We'll give him the deal. And now they are finding themselves cutting him before the deal kicks in. It was a 5-year extension that starts next year. He's been cut. They paid him $124 million for these 2 terrible years, which now means if you are looking at the biggest dead cap hits in NFL history, year by year for a player, they are Russell Wilson in 2025 for the Broncos is the number one biggest dead cap hit ever. Russell Wilson in 2024 for the Broncos is the number three biggest dead cap hit ever. And Russell Wilson in 2022 for the Seahawks is the fifth biggest dead cap hit ever. The only ones in between them are Tom Brady, who retired, and Matt Ryan, who they were borrowing money, trying to win, and then he got old and it was over. That's it. We're splitting up these two, but there's never been a player who had a dead cap hit bigger than $40 million until Russell Wilson's $85 million. So it's just an all-time disaster for everyone involved. And you can't recover from it. It is franchise crippling for a half decade. It is the last 2 years and the next three. And then maybe you can tear yourself out of it. But the problem then is, even then, when you're finally clear of the cap and the not having a quarterback and all of it, you know, 3 years from now, DeMonze, who the best players on the Broncos would be in a real world, their first-round picks from the last 3 years as they hit their prime, but those guys don't exist because they traded them for Russell Wilson. It's a disaster. All because they were so frustrated they hadn't beat the Chiefs in years. Man, it's so great. The Broncos and the Raiders just absolutely lighting their franchises on fire, making these rash win-now moves because they're so frustrated they can't beat the Chiefs. Oh, it's so delightful. Go ahead.
Russell Wilson probably didn't have a problem with it. Free money, man.
No, well, yeah, well, here's the thing. Bomani makes this point, and he's right. Russell Wilson was rich before this. So the money...
He was? Oh, are you talking about before he got to the Broncos, obviously? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm saying before he got to the Broncos. It's not like he came from oil money. Yeah, saying he was... When he got to the Broncos, he was already rich.
Of course.
So that had become normalized. So the money doesn't help it that much, man. I know that sounds... Nobody wants to hear it. But what I get it. The money, there is a level of pain that people that are actually struggling financially to deal with on day-to-day life, the survival, things like that. I totally get that. I'm not comparing the two. But what I am saying is, he wants to be great.
Right.
And he cares about his legacy. So it's not as if it was like, hey, here's the deal, fella. Who's playing, you know, in the Arena Football League, I'm going to give you, make 30 grand a year. I'm going to give you $100 million. And what you're going to give me is you're going to be humiliated for the next 2 years. And people are going to say you suck and your career's over. The guy's like, well, I don't know. I owe 18 grand on my Accord. I've got 2,200 in credit card debt. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to pay. You know what? I will take the deal. That's not the situation. It was somebody who had $100 million already. Like if someone had said to Russell Wilson, "I will give you $100 million, and what I want from you is public humiliation and the end of your NFL career. Will you sell me that for $100 million? He would have said, absolutely not. I don't think he'd have done it for $1 billion. Honest to God.
No, Russell Wilson definitely strikes.
You know what
me
I mean? Like, I don't think the, and again, you just have to change the number, but like, I'm not in a position where I don't want to sound like a I'm not in a position where I worry a lot about day-to-day finances, right? I worry about long-term finances. You know what I mean? Have I set myself up? You know, make sure all my family's taking care of all these things. But I'm not like I'm good day-to-day. So I don't know if someone was like, "Hey Nick, what's the number for this? You're going to be the butt of everyone in the sports media business's jokes for a couple years, and then you might never work again." Like, would I do that? Would I sign that deal for $50 million? No. I don't think there's a number. They're like, no, like the money's not worth it to me. You know what I mean? For something like that. Now, and again, I'm coming from a place of if I had
legacy.
If I was in a position, maybe. But you understand what I mean? So people are always like, oh, but he has the money. He was already rich, man. This is awful for Russ. And that's
why he hates it.
He hates it. And he's not really a sympathetic figure. Because of kind of how he's carried himself and some of these things.
Go ahead. But you say like the way that Russell Wilson's carried himself, he's just corny. Like, I've never seen Russell Wilson as like a bad guy or like, I don't see a lot of him as bad guys.
So
but like
I don't
Russell
think
Wilson,
he's a bad guy. I think he's pretty clearly a good guy.
Right.
But I also think he is, I don't think it's just that he's corny. I do think there was a level of, I want the attention and I want the credit, that irritated. I think corny is corny. I don't even know, but while injured before the Monday Night Football game, I'm going to do the ghost huddle for the cameras. and I'm going to do high knees on the plane in between games and then tell the media about it. Those things those all, are the those, types those of things. Those
do, they fall into the category of corny, but.
Yeah, but I but it's a different the attention type of seeking. Corny. Like I don't think his teammates in Seattle disliked him because he was corny. I think they disliked him because I think they thought he was phony. I think corny and phony are two different things. You know what I mean? And so there was a point where he became an easy target, but now it's like, geez, that was one of the quicker falls for an athlete without an off the field scandal or a major injury.
Right.
It was a, like, you went from awesome to, okay, just still pretty good, to, oh my God, they're giving you $85 million to go away. All right, what's next?
Oh, okay, so they were. Terrible. Go ahead. All right, so our Celtics, they smoked the Warriors by 52 points this weekend, man.
Yeah.
So they're the first team to win three games by 50-plus points in one season ever. They're obviously running away with the East, and now they're minus 105 to win the conference. So, should I get excited for them to win the finals? Do you think this is, or do you think this is a setup? I think there's something to be said about. I think I wasn't really going to talk about the Celtics. I was actually going to talk about the Bucks, but I think there's something to say with how, like how Drew Holiday is now on the Celtics. Their defense is probably the best, and like the Bucks obviously have their struggles. And I saw Giannis come out and say that. That he's really happy with the move that they made with trading Drew Holiday for Damian Lillard. He expressed that he was sad about, you know, making the trade, and he shed tears with Drew Holiday, and he's won a championship with him. But he knows that Damian Lillard can come in there and get them. But it's like, so I feel like it's directly correlated with like the defense and like the Milwaukee's. They don't necessarily have struggles, but I think that Milwaukee is kind of like imploding. Like they fire their coach, and it's just all after what?
Oh, it certainly like Giannis hasn't been some as type smooth. Of way. It certainly hasn't been as smooth as they thought. And then Giannis last night, all of a sudden, he doesn't play in the game because his Achilles acts up. So that's terrifying for them. I actually still believe in Milwaukee, but when Milwaukee trades Drew for Dame, I don't think they do it anticipating that Drew will then end up on Boston. Like that was a piece of this. Milwaukee did not anticipate.
Didn't think
Here's
about,
what I'll say fair. About Boston. Because Boston right now is the massive favorite to win the title. They're like plus 210, and the Denver is second best at plus 450. Boston is the massive favorite. Boston has the best five-man starting lineup in basketball by a mile. Now, they're in a weird spot because against the other best teams, I think most of the other best teams have a best player better than Tatum. But when you go Tatum, Brown, White, Drew, Kristaps, that starting five is unbelievable, which is why their point differential is the fifth best ever. They have the best record in the NBA by like seven games. So they are absolutely legit, which DeMonte is why they are now in a spot where if they don't win the title, it is a big-time failure. It's rare you truly get, before you've won a title, where you're in a spot of title or bust, but that is the spot they find themselves in. And if they don't make the finals, they'll make a massive change this offseason.
Yeah.
They'll have to shake the snow globe because it can't get better in the regular season than it is right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to hang with the Celtics when it comes to the finals. I think if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be the Nuggets. But I think any other team, I'm not going to say the Celtics are going to watch them, but I feel very comfortable against any other team. That includes the Warriors.
The Warriors won't be there. I mean, the Warriors had their number. I understand that prior to the 52-point game. But the Warriors, the Warriors will be very fortunate to make the playoffs this season, much less. So they don't have to worry about the Warriors. Team they have to worry about is the team they have to worry about every year, the Miami Heat. Right. Milwaukee's an interesting one, but the Miami Heat, I understand everybody dismisses the Miami Heat until the playoffs roll around, and then they're like, how'd they do it again? And the answer is they have the best coach in the league. Jimmy Butler is one of the best playoff performers in the league, and they understand how to win. And so the Heat could be a real problem. And Milwaukee, we'll talk more about Milwaukee on a later podcast or maybe later in the show. Giannis is having a sneaky, and now again, he tweaked his Achilles before the game last night. But Giannis might be having one of the quietest great seasons ever. So Giannis is 31 a night, 0.3 off his career high. 11 rebounds, 6.3 assists, which is his career high. And this is the number where you're like, wait, what? On 62% from the field. 62%. Giannis has been a super high efficiency player forever. He's never been above 57. And 57 is a crazy number. He's at 62%. So Milwaukee, but the problem is people don't trust Doc. And, you know, Dame hasn't played in the playoffs in a couple years. But I think the Miami is the team that should scare Boston. All right, quick break, come back, do our second segment. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in. What's Right with Nick Wright? That was a nice, tidy 40-minute A-block, Demonze. So we're going to go fast here through the Bs. I also censored some of our producers' questions. Here's the thing. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I make decisions for this podcast that are, I don't want to say they're bad for the podcast, but here's the thing. There are people who are more successful than me in this space, and they all seem to have decided that talking a lot about deeply, say, intimate details of their life is a good strategy. I obviously am not going to do that for a number of reasons, not the least of which is I do it with my kids, so it would probably not be the place for it. But the other thing that really moves the needle is talking shit on other media members. Like, oh, this beef here and that, whatever. And, like, that clearly does numbers, man. Like, people enjoy it. I don't know why, but people enjoy the kind of, you know, internet
soap opera drama.
Yeah, that type of stuff of all the places within the sports media space. And I'm just not going to use this platform for that. Not at this point.
If you want to open up about anything else, if you want to expand our horizons on what we talk about, I'm totally down for it.
I know you are, and I appreciate that. I think it's, I don't want to say it's tacky, because a lot of people, again, people who are more successful than me, whatever, it works for them. It's just not what, it's not what I want to do. And I actually think it would put my TV colleagues in a weird spot. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Like, and so I don't want to do it. So now that is, of course, with the exception of any chance I have to talk about, you know, my rival who I will vanquish, Pablo Torre. Of course I will. But I mean, he will go down and he knows he will. but aside from that, I'm just not going to do it. Like but what I will say, yeah, I'm just not going to do it. It's just not a need. And there was a point in my career when I was doing local radio when I was really into, like, man, bleep that guy. And those guys that I had beef with back then, I still have beef with. I still, to this day, if I get a chance to take a shot at him, I will. I'm still angry about it. Like, I still carry it with me. But I just don't want to be that guy. And again, maybe this will be used against me in the future if I do it. I'm just not. And I don't think it feels to me. And again, I might be totally wrong, because this podcast is what I would call moderately successful. It's not like a massive smash hit in the YouTube space. It does well. But maybe I'm just wrong. But it feels like empty calories. And it feels like the type of thing that is not long-term sustainable. And the only way it is to either up the outrageousness of your anecdotes or to just always be fighting with people. And like, maybe I will be at some point, but right now I'm just not into it. And I think this is one of the reasons it's good that I host this with you. And when it's not you with Diora, I also think it would be a truly terrible example if I was like with a split screen with you, if I was just like roasting someone in the media, somebody. Like, this guy is a clown. And you're just sitting there like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm just not going to do it. So instead, we're going to play a game we came up with called This or That. So Demonte, explain the game to the audience.
All right, so it's just a different version of This or That. So I'm going to tell you a story, and you're going to pick. Oh, we obviously missed a bunch of stories because we were off for a week and a half.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you two different stories, and you kind of pick which one you want to go in on.
Awesome. Let's do it.
So the first one, we got an NFC East story. So Jason Kelce announcing his retirement or Dak's new haircut?
Okay. Dak's new haircut is, again, this is an example what I'm talking about. I guarantee, if I did 90 seconds right now on Dak's haircut, it would do numbers on Twitter. It would do numbers, but I'm not going to do it. The Jason Kelce thing, I watched the whole thing. Here is what I find so unique about Jason Kelce. Okay? Jason Kelce, there's a number of things. I'll try to go through them quickly. One is the relationship he and Travis have is really special, and I think it's beautiful. And I've seen people make this point, and they're right. And I understand this is a mockable thing for me to say, but I agree with them. However, Jason and Travis were brought up by their parents to while being alpha athletes who on the football field, both of them at various times are known for losing their minds. Travis used to have a big, Travis like body bumped year. Andy Reid in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a few weeks ago. Jason, there is a great clip of Jason just screaming like a maniac in somebody's face, like after the play. These guys on the field are animals. And off the field, sorry to sound corny, but as open and in touch with their emotions as any two men I've ever come across. And I find it admirable. They are not embarrassed about it. They are not shy about it. They will publicly cry and publicly express how much they love the people who matter to them, without a thought in the world about it. And that's a testament to how they were raised and who they are as people. And I thought that Jason's speech yesterday was really beautiful. From a football standpoint, here is what I find so unique about Jason Kelce. Jason Kelce was a sixth-round pick, DeMonze, who had had some early career success, but he came into the league in 2011. He made a couple Pro Bowls, but as he would tell it, in 2016 was on the fringe of, you know, being traded or the Eagles getting rid of him. He was struggling so badly. And so he's a sixth-round draft pick who, through the first 6 years of his career, has middling success despite making a couple Pro Bowls. And then over the final 7 years of his career, is first-team All-Pro six of the 7 years and is the best offensive player on two Super Bowl teams. So it's not like he was this first-round guy that was, he was a, you know, of a guy who changed positions at Cincinnati in college, was a late-round pick, and then at like 27 years old, no, at, that's not right, at damn near 30 years old, turned himself into a guy who will go down as one of the greatest centers ever. It's a very unique career.
That's crazy to kick it into another notch at that point.
Yes. At the end, it's even crazier when it's not like, oh, this guy was a five-star kid out of high school, a first-round pick who just, never locked
in. Trusted the process.
Never matured.
And got it down.
Yeah. It was that he was a fringe, undersized guy throughout his whole career, kind of played like it, and then damn near at 30, unlocked a whole new level. And it's really a really remarkable story. And now he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. Yeah, he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. So it's great. All right, next.
Maybe he doesn't retire if the NFL bans the tush push after this last year. But pick an NFC East story. Sorry.
That's the one
pick
we just
a college
did,
hoop story. You're fine. Caitlin Clark's scoring record or court storming takes after a Duke player was injured. That was weird.
I guess here's the thing. I got to do both of these. I'm going to not do this or that. I'm going to do both quickly. Here's the thing on court storming. We need to be a little more judicious about how often courts are stormed. That way it stays a little special. And then everyone needs to stop acting like they're wildly dangerous. Shut up. Just shut up. Hey, people, I stormed a court in college. It's one of my favorite moments of my entire life. It is awesome to be able to do it. It's part of college sports. And if somebody occasionally is going to twist an ankle, that could have happened on the inbounds play. Stop it. Just stop it. And people are like, oh my God, there's a student, you know, in a college football game, tore their ACL. Man, there you got half a dozen students at these games that get alcohol poisoning. Like, life can be dangerous. That's not banned court storming. Stop it. Now, should you storm the court if you're the number 9 team in the nation beating the number 8 team? No. Should you storm the court if you were the Vegas favorite in the game? No. But if it's a big time upset or if you beat Duke, it's fine. Okay. But the bigger story is Caitlin Clark. DeMonze, Caitlin Clark's game on the ratings just came in. Caitlin Clark's game on Sunday did a bigger number than Warrior Celtics. Did 3.5 million. Warrior Celtics did 3 million. Warrior Celtics on ABC. 3.5 million. For a women's college basketball game. Caitlin Clark is a superstar. Not a female superstar. She is a superstar. She moves the needle. And the WNBA has been looking for someone who moves the needle. And you have her plus Angel coming in. Plus people care about Juju. The girl from USC, you should go, DeMonze, to a USC women's game. You're in Southern California. Juju Watkins is the next great player.
Yeah, she's already a great player,
but she's a freshman. So I think women's college basketball is having a moment, and I think Caitlin Clark's going to extend that moment. I think it's really dope.
And then, like, the WNBA, like, expands? I think, well, certainly people...
Yeah, exactly. Because I think the WNBA, they have two great teams. They have the Liberty and the Aces. And they played in the finals last year. They both have, you know, multiple MVP caliber players. But it hasn't garnered quite the buzz yet. But if you already have a pretty high level of basketball, and then you add in a superstar in Caitlin Clark to the league, could be pretty dope. Could be pretty dope. All right, next.
Pick a tall guy to discuss. Chet going for the number one seed or Wimby going for defensive player of the year?
Wimby. I mean, listen, right now the guy's looking pretty great right now. And, you know, my skepticism is well known on this show. Right now it's looking like he's going to prove me wrong, but he's been really special. And the Spurs are understandably being cautious with him. Chet, the reason I'm not going to say Chet going for the one seed is because it's SGA going for the one seed. Now, the Lakers did beat him last night, and they have lost 5 of 6 ever since SGA said he has something for LeBron. So just keep that in mind, because that could be a first-round matchup, potentially, a 1 versus 8 or 2 versus 7. But the story would be Wimby. All right, next.
All right, pick a quarterback debate to weigh in on. Justin Fields, yeah. Next team, or Jaden Daniels versus Drake May at number 2?
I'll weigh in on Justin Fields' next team, which is, I don't understand, if the reports are accurate, why Atlanta would rather spend $40-plus million on Cousins rather than spending a second-round pick on getting a look at Justin Fields. Cousins is better than Fields, but Cousins is 36 coming off an Achilles. Fields, with those weapons on turf, indoors, if he can unlock the best version of himself, you'd have the quarterback taken care of for the next 10 years. So I'd rather do that than a best-case scenario, you have the quarterback taken care of for the next 3 years when you're not a team that in those 3 years is probably going to be able to compete for a championship. So I think Atlanta's making a mistake there, but because of that, I don't know where Justin's going to go because Pittsburgh reportedly is not interested in him. There's a lot of teams that I think should consider it, but it doesn't look like they're going to. All right, next.
Which franchise tag merits discussion, Jarius Sneed or T. Higgins?
Well, I just think it's interesting that they're both getting franchise tagged, but it seems like the Chiefs are the team willing to take the mature long-term view, which is, listen, if we can't come to a long-term agreement with him, we need to trade him rather than keep him for just one more year and then lose him for nothing. Right. And despite the fact the Chiefs have won 3 of the last 5 Super Bowls, and if there was ever a team that would have a reason to be like, screw that, we're going for a three-peat, forget the future, we're win right now. And the Bengals, on the other hand, who've won nothing, who are about to pay Chase, I shouldn't say they've won nothing, they went to a Super Bowl, they won the AFC, about to have to pay Chase top of the market, just paid Burrow top of the market. The Chiefs are going to probably trade Sneed for a second. The Bengals could get a first for Higgins, and it looks like they're not going to do it, which is wild to me. All right, we answer a few listener questions next. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in What's Right with Nick Wright. DeMonze, let's do Ryan Kozlov's question start off, because I think it's an interesting one.
Ryan Kozlov asked, with Jason's retirement, are the Kelce brothers the best football brothers ever over Manning brothers or others?
Okay, so here are the ones that come to mind. Obviously, Peyton and Eli are high on the list. TJ and JJ Watt merit strong consideration. Both Defensive Player of the Year caliber guys. JJ is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. TJ's building a first ballot Hall of Fame caliber career, right? You've got Bruce and Clay Matthews from a while ago, but you know, two of the best offensive linemen ever, and the incredible longevity for both of them. And then Sterling and Shannon. Sterling was an all-time player who had his career cut short by a neck injury. Shannon's one of the five best tight ends of all time. So those are the ones that are on the list. Jason and Travis have a strong argument because Travis is the GOAT tight end and Jason is the best center of the last 30 years, maybe. So JJ and TJ have a strong case. Sterling and Shannon would have if Sterling had just played longer. The Matthews brothers are up there. I just don't think Eli was that great. I know he won the two Super Bowls, but I just don't think he was that great.
Aren't the Jones brothers pretty good?
The Jones brothers? Who are you talking about?
Tripping? Like Chandler Jones, Jones and Owens. Doesn't he have a brother?
But the Chandler Jones, sorry, I just didn't know who you're talking about. So Arthur Jones,
isn't there three of them? The other one's a boxer, like a UFC fighter. The
MMA
like
guy, John right. Bones, yes. I mean, so that's a different story because that guy's one of the maybe the best UFC fighter ever. Chandler was a great NFL player and then unfortunately he's dealing with some things.
Arthur the Bosa was brothers a good as well. Player.
Yeah,
Bosa so, brothers.
Yeah, those guys to me are not there. Like, because the Bosa brothers are not as good as the Watts. Like, you know what I mean? They're both really good, but they're not as good as the Watts. And there's more brothers than you think because the Diggses, Stephon and Trayvon, the St. Browns, Equanimeous, who isn't that good, but Amon-Ra, who's awesome. There's more Equanimeous, St.
Brown had a brother.
Yeah, he played for the Packers for a while. I forget who he's with right now, Equanimeous St. Brown. But the Kelseys are up there, man. Obviously, Rondé and Tiki, but I don't think Tiki was that great. Tiki was really good, but not all time. And Rondé just got into the Hall, I think, or it was close call. All right, what's next?
Topic Veyron asks, is Luka the Josh Allen of the NBA?
Oh, no, to me, they're not actually similar at all because Luka was awesome immediately. Josh had a really rough first couple years, then turned into somebody who was great. Luka was, you know, winning MVPs of a league at 16 years old. So, you know, they're very different. If the question is like guys who haven't quite got over the hump, I understand that, like super talents. I get that part of
Jason
it.
Jason Tatum.
But
Jason Tatum. Postseason success.
That's interesting.
Getting those moments, the big moments. Game 7 with Miami, I guess.
I don't know that there's a Josh Allen in the NBA. I'd have to think about that longer. All right, let's ask one more from Chris Gerard.
Nick, are you still 100% convinced about Caleb after all the stories that came out lately, or do you have minor doubts like most?
Yeah, I don't. The stories are all nonsense to me. What? He cried with his mom. He paints his nails. I don't care. I watched the guy play football. He's awesome. And I forget who made. Go ahead, DeMonte.
I think after the first year, obviously CJ Stroud set the bar kind of high, but he didn't have nearly as much hype as Caleb Williams, and I don't think that Caleb Williams is going to go and have a better first year than CJ Stroud. I honestly think that CJ Stroud will probably end up having a better career than Caleb Williams, but it's obviously Caleb Williams hasn't made it to the NFL
well,
yet.
So listen, CJ just had maybe the best rookie season ever. What I right. will say that is working in Caleb's favor is he's going to such an atypical team to have the number one pick. The Bears won 7 games last year. They have the number one pick because the Panthers were terrible. Most number one picks are going to terrible teams. The Bears were bad, but they weren't. They were 7-10 with bad quarterback play. They were 5-3 over the last 8 games. The defense got way better once they got Montez Sweat. They have their right tackle. They have a wide receiver. They have a ton of cap space, and they're going to drop Caleb in there. So I think the Bears are going to be good, and I think Caleb's going to be excellent. Is Caleb a different type of cat? Guys, this is – he's the our first college football – like, he's the first LeBron. Guy – well, no, not LeBron. I'm not putting that on him, but he – so we've had a few guys – who were considered consensus number one picks, you know, a couple years before they came out. He's the first one in the NIL era. So the dude made $10 million last year. He lived in a luxury condo in LA. So does he carry himself differently than most college quarterbacks we're used to? Yes, because he's already super rich and super famous. So that can rub people the wrong way. I get it. The flip side to that is he's less likely to melt because all of a sudden he's super rich. Or to like the NFL money and fame and attention is less likely to impact him because he already dealt with it. And so I just think the guy's a superstar. And I think the Bears would be utterly insane to do anything other than to send his name in right now. All right. Great job, Demonze. Great show, everyone. I got to get to work. Going to go on with Colin. See, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock today. NBA season now on Tuesdays in place of Mahomes Mountain, King of the Hill, our NBA pyramid. And tomorrow, NBA tiers. The committee comes back with NBA tiers, not NFL edition. So that'll be on First Things First tomorrow. Like, rate, subscribe, review to the show on YouTube, on iTunes, do all those things. In fact, if you listen to us on the podcast, I want to test something. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not. Maybe this will get us delisted. I'm not sure. Unsubscribe and then resubscribe. I'm just curious what that'll do on iTunes and stuff. Unsubscribe, resubscribe. Try that. I just want to know. I just want to see how real these rankings actually are. And if you watch us on YouTube, make sure you're subscribing. All right, see you guys on Thursday. What's right? Hey, it's Nick Wright. Thank you so much for watching. Please do us a favor. Click subscribe. It helps my ego. And Demonze's got a financial bonus writing on a number of YouTube subscribers. So help him out. And also, click the bell. I don't know what the bell does, but they tell me to tell you to click the bell. And your audio listeners, people that have commutes, drives, whatever it is, subscribe to the podcast as well, wherever you get the podcast. Same show, just, you know, just in your ears instead of through your eyes. All that. Check it out. Appreciate y'all.